Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Church Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. In a moment, I'll be joined by my colleague Mike Neff to break down the penultimate race weekend of the year at ISM Raceway. Denny Hamlin had a walk-off Game 7 moment at Phoenix by dominating on Sunday, advancing himself into the championship race at Homestead this weekend. He'll be joined by his two Joey Gibbs Racing teammates, Martin Truex Jr. and Kyle Busch, as well as Kevin Harvick from Stewart Haas Racing. We'll also preview the Xfinity Series Championship race at Homestead, which will have Christopher Bell, Cole Custer, Tyler Reddick, and Justin Allgaier battling for a championship. And we can't forget about the Truckers. Stuart Friesen won on Friday at Phoenix, and he'll be joined by Brett Moffitt, Ross Chastain, and Matt Crafton come this weekend at Homestead. But before we get started, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Church Podcast on Apple Podcasts, as those ratings help us out tremendously. Now let's review Phoenix and preview Homestead with Neff. All right, Neff, the championship four weekend is set at Homestead via Phoenix this weekend. I don't know how you describe the racing, lackluster at best.
Steaming pile of feces.
Yuck. But yeah, I mean, we'll dive into it. Denny Hamlin got his sixth win of the year, had a walk-off moment, didn't call a shot after Texas, but, you know, he did say he'd have the pieces, he knew he'd have the equipment and the car to go in and potentially win at Phoenix, and that's what he did, dominating the race, specifically the second half once he got the lead. Sometimes had a lead of 13 seconds late in the race. And then a late caution came out, which we'll definitely get into. But Denny Hamlin, Neff, he wins his way into Homestead, and like I said from the beginning of the playoffs, I think he's the favorite.
To your credit, you've made this call and stuck with it, and right now it's playing out. I'm still curious. I mean, I thought we were going to see that breaking moment when the caution flew at the end of the race today. Mm-hmm. And you saw the in car and he beat his hand on the steering wheel. And I'm like, here we go. Here's that moment of doubt that creeps in and he ends up losing the race. But to his credit, he threw it on the outside and let it eat and it stuck and he ended up winning the race. But it was impressive to say the least that Joe Gibbs ended up with three cars going to the final four. The racing was beyond bad, but yeah, I mean, it is what it is right now. I'm honestly not looking forward to next year if this is going to be the finale the week after Martinsville. But for now, I mean, credit to Denny. Like I said, he made the mistake and went from up 22 to down 20 last week. And so he told his team he was going to make it up to him, and he did it. And so I give him credit. He is absolutely a changed person psychologically. Mm-hmm. And I think that so far anyway, seems to be playing out in his driving as well.
Yeah, for sure. It was interesting because, you know, as soon as the weekend started in practice, the 11 was by far the quickest car. And that came to tuition in the race. Come stage one, fastest car, won the stage. There was a late race car.
I think Kyle was going to win the stage.
Yeah, and then there's a caution.
Fastest car, but yep. On the caution.
Yep, a couple questionable cautions today. So that one was for Stenhouse with 9 laps to go on the stage. Hamlin got by, got the win in stage one. Stage two, Logano got the win. And then Neff, you know, we'll get into this a little bit more, but once stage three began, those two cars went opposite directions. 22 fell way back. 11 got better, if it couldn't already get better. And, you know, he dominated to win the stage. So that's his sixth win of the year. Like I've said for, you know, weeks now, this is statistically, outside of 2012 or 2010 when he won 8 races, he's got more top fives than ever this year by 4. He's got 19 this year. Previous high was 15. And now he's got more top tens than he ever has, 23. He's led 920 laps, which is his most since 2012. So it's 11 teams hitting on all 8 cylinders enough, and that comes a year after not going to victory lane for the first time in his career, which I think that makes it all more special to the driver.
Yeah, again, I feel like they, as a team, and he as a driver, really regrouped this year. And I give credit to Gabe Hart. I won't deny I was fully on the Steve Letarte bandwagon at the end of the race today when you had the caution with whatever it was, 9 laps to go. And they come down pit lane, and Denny's got literally like a 3-second to 4-second advantage on second place coming down pit lane, to where changing 4 tires should have been a no-brainer. And Gabe Hart made a two-tire call to keep Denny in the lead. And the way that panned out, Denny made it work. I really thought it was a bad choice, but in the end, it was right. So we'll give him credit on the scoreboard on that one. But they've done whatever they've needed to do most of the time this year, and now we got one more race to see who can execute the best and hold up the big trophy at the end of the year.
Yeah, for sure. And let's dig into that a little bit more, what you just said, that late race pit call by Chris Gabehart. Now, that came via a caution with, I believe, 9 laps to go, and John Hunter Nemechek got in the wall. His second start got in the wall in the number 36 car.
Caressed the wall would be a good choice.
Yeah, little smack. Nothing too much. And, you know, it was so much so that the NBC cameras didn't even have a camera on it. They had it in the... And I saw in the post-race coverage, they actually had an iPhone camera. I'm guessing from a fan. And they showed it that he smacked the wall. Brief little hit. And we've had this discussion all year long. Darlington comes to mind of when Kyle Busch plowed the wall down for 2 laps there at the end, and they didn't throw a caution for that. Yet they'll throw a caution for this. I think we agree, you know, wholeheartedly on this. That doesn't warrant a caution. What says you?
Completely agree. I'm sure that there might have been some bits and pieces of debris that came off of that car, but there was nothing significant, and it was so far up and out of the groove that it was not going to impact the end of the race. And the bottom line was, with the package that we're racing this year, especially at tracks of a mile or less in length, The racing is horrible after 3 laps after a restart. And they had an opportunity to throw a caution, to set up a restart, to decide who your final 4 would be. And you were basically given an opportunity to make up that quote-unquote Game 7 moment that they're always trying to get with these playoffs. And that's what they did. They took the chance, threw the caution. You can argue it all day long, but we've been bitching about it all season. There is no consistency on these cautions, and they did it again today. And I wrote a column about it for Front Stretch 4 weeks ago now, I think it was, that all other major sports officials are critiqued and reviewed, and if they suck at their job, they are basically not allowed to do the more important races in their job. And the fact that the race directors / officials for NASCAR not only don't get critiqued or held accountable, they don't have to answer to anybody in the public eye. And they're just, it's the most infuriating thing to me that they don't bring them to the media center after the race and let us grill them. Because I would say at least 10 times this year, or at least 10 different races this year, I would have loved to have asked some questions as to what the hell they were thinking.
Yeah, I mean, well said. Like I said, I don't think that was warning a caution. I brought up the Kyle Busch example. And I truly, like you kind of brought up, I think NASCAR just wanted anything to throw a caution. Because Hamlin had a 9-10-second lead at that point. And, you know, we saw the reaction he had once that caution flew. He's beating on the steering wheel. Almost kind of similar to 2010, 9 years ago at the same track, even though that was for a different reason post-race. So I don't think that was a caution. And, I mean, we'll get into this a little bit later, but, you know, Bubba Wallace admitted he intentionally threw a caution. NASCAR never admit that they, you know, intended to do this or did this on purpose, but that doesn't warrant a caution in our opinion. So it's not just us, it's everybody. I mean, that camera, the iPhone... Yikes. And it was a 6-lap caution, too. So, I mean, that's for just smacking the wall. It's ridiculous.
I mean, that's what you're going to have. I mean, the caution comes out. Pace car's got to catch the field. It spends a lap getting the field lined up. Then you got to bring the lead lap cars down pit lane. Then you got to bring the lap down cars down pit lane. Then you got to get the one to go. I mean, 6 laps is a reasonable length of caution just because of everything you have to do. Now, I personally would have liked to see them call it a quickie caution and have lead lap and lap down cars all come down at one time and save yourselves a lap. But it's unfortunately, you have to have at least that, so it's going to be at least four laps, if not five, every time, no matter what.
Yeah, and it came out with nine to go, so we had a three-lap sprint to the finish. And you brought up the pit call by Gabehart. Both him and Blaney, Jeremy Bullins for Blaney, elected to go with two tires. Everyone else, four. You know, I'll give you honestly, I was surprised. And I know Kyle Larson was on the verge, literally on the verge. Camel was side-by-side with him pretty much when the caution flew. I'm surprised they didn't stay out. And I know they got back up to fourth there at the end, but as we saw, tires did not really matter today. It kind of flashes back to Martinsville a couple weeks ago when Larson's car was terrible. And then I think it was at the end of stage two, Truex got by him for the win, but it was, pretty
barely.
Yeah, barely. Good finish. And Larson needed all those points. And you want to get all those points because you never know what can happen, and he missed it by what, like 30 something points, but regardless, you never know what can happen. So I'm surprised they had nothing to lose. They weren't going to win the race from seventh, in all reality. So surprised he or someone didn't do something different. Even a Harvick or a Truex, because they have nothing to lose. So, yep. Yeah, I was surprised by the two tire call, but I was also surprised that people didn't stay out.
I figured one of the three, either Hamlin, Blaney, or Logano. Who else was in it?
Larson.
Larson. One of those four would have stayed out just to take a shot.
Well, and Logano was a lap down, so he had to stay out to take the wave around.
Was he a lap down? Yeah,
there was a bunch of lap down, because there's only eight cars in the lead lap at that point.
Right. Okay. So, but the other three, yeah. I would think one of them at least would have took a shot, because you knew if you came down pit road, you were starting behind them, and they'd already proven that the track position was everything. So I would have at least rolled the dice if I'd been one of those two.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Blaney was in a prime position. He ran top really three all day long, pretty much. I had a good car. So if he sniffed clean air, I think it could have been a different outcome. And as we saw in the final restart, we were texting back and forth, and the outside line was the preferred groove on restarts all race long, really all season long at every track, pretty much, except for like your Martinsville's or whatnot.
Atlanta. For some reason, the outside groove at Atlanta doesn't work.
Truth. But it worked at Phoenix. And I was surprised, I got to be honest with you, that Hamlin elected to take the outside. I know you can roll better, especially when the front or the finish line's in the middle of a corner. But, going into one and two, we knew the restarts were wild at Phoenix. They have been really since they put this dog leg or, got rid of the grass on the dog leg.
So I would say since they paved it.
Yeah, since they paved the dog leg and they're 5-6 wide at times, literally, and that's crazy because it's not that, it is wide down there, but then you got to get into 2-3 wide at the most going into turn, what is now one, used to be three. So I was surprised that Hamlin was going to allow Blaney to be on his inside, because if Blaney washes up a little bit, there goes Hamlin's shot of making it to Homestead.
Yep. But amazingly, and I would generally think Kyle helped out there because of the fact that Kyle muscled his way down to the inside of Blaney when they got to the dog leg and kind of took away that very bottom groove, which even if it didn't really mechanically impact Blaney, it made him think about it. And it made him focus on Kyle for a minute, which let Denny have unobstructed focus on getting out and around. And Kyle ends up getting in front of him by the time they get to the backstretch, which ultimately, whether he did or didn't, I felt like it at least looked like he might have slowed up slightly just to kind of break the momentum of Blaney a little bit more and give Denny that little bit of edge and then go after him and try and take a shot. I was still somewhat surprised that Kyle didn't get to him with four tires, but I guess it probably took a little bit longer than that for them to heat up. If you'd had a 5 or 6 lap run, it might have been different.
And Hamlin's car was, clean air means a lot there, but also Hamlin's car was in a different zip code. Now, in theory, should four tires matter? Absolutely. That's what we're begging for. With this package, unfortunately, it doesn't seem like it warrants that. Specifically, like here, Martinsville, too, like tires don't matter. They said they could go, 2,000 laps or 1,000 laps, whatever it was, on one side of tires.
Yeah.
That's unreal.
Crazy.
We need more fall off with these tires. But, I was going to be honest. I was pretty bummed for him when that caution flew, because I thought he was going to lose it somehow. But fortunately for him, he did not. And you really think Kyle Busch gave him a break, or do you think he just needed a few more laps?
I mean, I feel like Kyle helped him. And then after that, I think it was a matter of Kyle probably needed a couple more laps to get the pressures all the way up in the tires to really make a difference with the four fresh tires. So, I mean, I think it was a combination of things there. But it still surprised me because, I thought four tires would be better than two, and I thought it was going to be enough to get it done. But Denny did what he had to do. Sure. And, again, it's the new improved Denny Hamlin getting it done.
For sure. But someone who didn't get it done today, Neff, was Logano. He did get it done in the second stage, but once that third stage started, and he started from the lead, but fell all the way a lap down, and like I said, took the wave around there and the final caution with what only nine laps to go, like we were talking about. It's weird because they said they only added, a half pound of air pressure in one of the tires?
I thought they took it out.
Maybe they took it out, yeah.
But either way, I, as much as I'd like to hope we're not this knife's edge dependent on the setup, that changing a half pound of air throws us that far out to lunch. I'm hoping it was more of the infamous Dale Jr. mixed match set of tires, which if anybody who was a Dale Jr. fan through the years knows, almost every single race, at some point during the race, they would go just to garbage and he would blame it on a mismatched set of tires, like every time. And I felt like that may have actually been what happened with Logano, because I can't believe a half pound of air, and I think they may have made a minor wedge adjustment too, but that may be wrong. But either way, that minor of an adjustment shouldn't take you from dominating a stage to a lap down, and if it runs long enough, maybe ended up two laps down. I mean, they were that bad. So I have to feel like that there was something to do with that set of tires, but we'll probably never be able to know because we don't get the data that the teams get.
Right, yeah. And he mentioned that over the radio, too. He said, I think the set of tires is on backwards, which is wild to think about. But, yeah, it's crazy to think how drastically that car fell off from clean air, which, you know, we talked about. And there was a point where he pulled, 3 seconds ahead of Hamlin. And, Hamlin was struggling to get by Chase, which was a good battle. But as I put on Twitter today, that's, the epitome of this rules package this year. You get to a guy's rear bumper and can't pass him. That defines this rules package this year. And it's what Matt Weaver of AutoWeek's been blasting NASCAR about on Twitter in some of his articles. It's what we've talked about here. It's what other outlets have talked about. Other people, other drivers. Kyle Busch hates the package. But you got to, you got to deal with your cards are dealt. So it's, I don't know. The racing product today is not what we want to see. Really all weekend. The Xfinity race wasn't that great, and nor was the truck race. So,
yeah, I mean, other than the battle that Denny had with Chase Elliott.
It was a good battle, but that's...
It was a decent battle. But even then, if you look at it away from the battle, Denny was so much better than Chase, and it took him how long to get by Chase?
The whole run.
I mean, that's the part that you had to kind of couch that with, is that, yes, it was a great battle, but Denny's car was probably 5 miles an hour faster than Chase's.
Yep.
And he couldn't get by him. So, I mean, that's the frustration with this package for sure.
Yeah, that was, like I said, that was the epitome of it right there. Just him not being able to get by. It literally took him a whole run. And then he finally got by, and then guess what he did? He tracked down Logano. Surprise. I just had to get out front in clean air. So, Neff, this race was dominated by playoff drivers. You know, we talked about Ryan Blaney a little bit. It's wild because he came into the playoffs not with a lot of playoff points, picked up 5 in the last round by winning Talladega, but he finishes the round of 8 with a 5.3 finishing average and yet misses the championship round by 30-something points. So that just shows enough that the regular season definitely matters in acquiring a whole bunch of playoff points.
Absolutely. We saw it with Truex when he won the title 2 years ago, when they first started doing the stage stuff. And yep, those guys I mean, racked up stage points and got to a point where, if I'm not mistaken, at the end of the regular season, they had better than a full race of points in their playoff points. And I mean, that's huge. When you set yourself up to where you can have a bad race, finish DFL, and still, you know, still be in the mix. I mean, that's, anybody else does that, that has that bad of a race, they're out of it. And you know, you build up that bank account, and then you can draw on it through the whole playoffs. And that's what we had this time. I mean, if you look at it, Logano and Bush were the two main points winners in a regular season. Harvick and Truex were up in the top five, and those two had already pointed, had already managed to win their way through. And so you had Bush and Logano were sitting there poised and ready to advance on points because of what they had built up in a regular season. And then Denny manages to spoil that party for Logano by winning today, but you still had Kyle make it. And it was because Kyle had a decent round. It wasn't exceptional, but he had enough regular season points to fall back on that that was the answer. So it's, and you heard Larson talking about it post-race, that, you know, they didn't build up that bank account. You know, and that's been their problem so far since he's been running, for that matter. So they're, now that they're looking stronger and looking better, their focus this coming year is going to be on trying to get more stage points and more playoff points so that they can be poised to have potential problems in the playoffs and still be in contention.
Yeah, you brought up Kyle. I think his playoff points saved him really all playoffs, because they have not been themselves all playoffs.
Especially the second round. I thought the second round they had a really bad round, and they got away with it.
Same with Logano in the second round. I mean, you think of Talladega. He gets involved in like three crashes. Doesn't even get to start Dover. He starts at 22 laps down and finally comes out on the track after having something go wrong in the axle. And then Kansas, he got in that late race incident too. So they, you know, the 22 teams had something go wrong almost, it seems like, every race. Got in the fight at Martinsville last week, from what I remember, at Texas was fairly clean. And then today they just missed the setup on one run that was the longest stretch of racing of the whole race. So unfortunate for them. Fortunately, that, you know, right now they are fifth in points, so they are the best of the rest, which, I got to be honest with you, looking at the point standings, I'm surprised that they're fifth because of how eventful their playoffs have been. And they got a 23-point cushion over Kyle Larson for that position, so that's a healthy margin for sure. You know, Logano won the race last year, so you expect him to be good this year, even though he doesn't have a ton to fight for. Just fifth, which is, hey, it's better than sixth. So, Neff, I do want to talk about Chase Elliott, because his round, you know, we talk about round of eights or round of anything. Since NASCAR implemented this format in 2014, I think this is probably the worst round by a driver in a single round. Three finishes of 32nd or worse. His best finish was at Texas, involved in, he had a mechanical failure at Martinsville, wrecked last week on lap 10, and then today he blew a tire and wrecked. So, you know, he missed the cutoff by over 100 points, and it shows in the point standings, he's 11th. And just like I was surprised with Logano being 5th, I'm surprised Logano's or Elliott's 11th.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I mean, 32nd place was his highest finish in this round, and that, you got to work hard to suck that bad. yeah, I mean, and I shouldn't say that, because there are teams that race on a regular basis that unfortunately can't get better than that, but it's because of their equipment. Elliott has the equipment to be contending for top tens at least, and yeah, they were snake bit the whole round, and it did not matter. And for that matter, I mean, it's been somewhat that way all year. Yeah, they've had some flashes of brilliance, but there have been plenty of other times that they've been running decent and then blown a tire or had a pit road miscue or whatever and killed their day. And a lot of it has been issues out of their own control. Same thing with Johnson. I mean, that's, Jimmy Johnson has been pretty snake bit the last couple of years too. And I don't know. They always say that luck is when preparation meets opportunity. And bad luck is honestly the same thing. That if you're not preparing properly, it can really bite you. And I feel like it's really been biting HMS for a couple of years. There was somebody on Twitter today that was talking about if Elliott didn't have bad luck, where would he be running? And I'm like, he'd probably be running 10th to 7th. Because right now, that's where HMS is. They're not at the Stuart Haas, Joe Gibbs level. So they're going to be back half of the top 10 right now. And that's not where that organization should be, and that's not where Chase should be. So I'm sure he's going to be very happy to go on vacation at the end of this year and get this year behind him, because it has been more of a nightmare than a dream. And I feel like it's not going to be that much longer before HMS gets back on top. And when they do, I think you're going to have Chase Elliott and William Byron both battling it out for multiple championships when it happens. But right now, that whole organization is not only snake bit, but it's just still struggling some. And it's up to them to dig their way out, because they've got the resources. But right now, they're not getting it done.
Yeah, with the way that Byron's rookie year went last year, if you would have told me coming into Homestead that he'd be the highest running Hendrick Motorsports driver in the standings, I would have called you a liar. Not because I don't believe in William, because I think he's a great talent, and I think he's going to be really good, like you said. But I'm surprised that he's not had a Chase. But then in the grand scheme of things, you look at his second half of the year compared to Chase's, and he's been more consistent, and that's what counts. So, Neff, you wanted to bring this up. So the non-playoff standings compared to the point standings after Homestead. So obviously there's four guys going for a championship next week at Homestead. But if there wasn't, if it was the traditional format, year-long, obviously, you know, into the regular season this year, Logano and Kyle both had a really good battle. But say, you know, 35 races deep, no resets or anything, Logano would have a 6-point lead over Harvick, 13 over Kyle Busch, 29 over Truex, and 31 over Denny Hamlin. So we'd have five guys, you know, battling for a title. And that would be a fun race. I get NASCAR wants the Game 7 moment, which they're going to get, and they've gotten the past 5 years as well. But this would be a good points battle, too. And I know you wanted to bring it up.
Well, not only that, your guy that would be leading the points can't win the championship.
Yep, Logano would be first, and he can't win.
Logano would be in first place, and right now he is out. No championship. And that's just... I mean, I know I'm the grumpy old get off my pit box guy, and I'm living in the past and the whole okay boomer thing. I understand that, but racing is different, and I don't like playoffs. I don't like chases. I like it to be a season long deal. And yes, more often than not, you're going to have championships settled before the last race when you do that. And it lacks that excitement that you get in playoffs, but it rewards the best teams. And this sport is so team-based that people don't realize it. And unfortunately, this time around, it would have been an unbelievable finish. Now, and as many people have pointed out, and I agree with it, it probably wouldn't be that way if they didn't have the playoffs and the stages.
Yep.
The guys would have run different. And you probably wouldn't have five guys in contention, but you might. Who knows? You might have seven in contention. But it's just kind of frustrating to me that the guy that has scored the most points this season is out of a shot to win the championship. That really kind of frustrates me.
Yeah, I get that point too. I mean, like I said, NASCAR wants these Game 7 moments. You brought up that earlier as well, and they're going to get it like they always get it at Homestead. And you're probably going to have to win the race in order to win the championship, unless Kyle Larson doesn't tear down the wall and he wins the race, which he's been close to the past 2 or 3 years at the track. So we'll definitely get our predictions later. Neff, anything else on the Cup race at Phoenix before we kind of get into – I want to get into Bubba Wallace a little bit and about what happened over the weekend.
I want to give a shout-out to just Phoenix in general. The track improvements have been amazing. I love what they've done to enhance the fan experience there. The campground
and what have you
been pretty amazing. I'm on board with it. I'll rail on them about the fact that they're bragging about it being a sellout when it's 45,000 seats, just like I am at Watkins Glen. Watkins Glen is a fabulous piece of Americana. It's an amazing piece of the NASCAR schedule. I love that we go there. I think it's one of the destination races of our entire season. But when they brag about having sellouts and they've got 32,000 seats, I'm not feeling the love. I don't think that's that great of an accomplishment. And I want to shout out to Eddie Gossage and the gang at Texas, because they got roasted for not having the stands full when they had 80,000 people there, but they seat 138,000. So I just want to give that shout out to Eddie and the gang for having a good crowd. But I love Phoenix. I think that the improvements that they have done and embracing the fan experience and really pushing to make that experience more is where the sport is headed, unfortunately. The car culture is not what it used to be. Kids don't grow up romanticizing cars like they did back in my day. And so you don't have the love for automobiles. And so you've got to come up with other things in addition to automobiles that draw kids into the sport and draw fans to it. And Phoenix has done a great job of enhancing that fan experience. And the amount of campers that they get there is crazy. I did read something this weekend that they quit doing a shuttle to some campground or something, and I feel bad about that. Hopefully they'll rectify that next year. But in general, what they have done is great. I think the facility has grown, or not really grown, but enhanced in leaps and bounds with this project. And I love that they've been sinking a lot of money into a lot of tracks around the country of late, and I hope that keeps happening. I hope they continue to make the fan experience great, because I feel like the attendance is on the way up. We're never going to get back to the late 90s, 2000s, but I think we're better than the late 2000s, early 2010s, and I think we're headed in the right direction, but I think enhancing these fan experiences is helping that for sure.
Yeah, totally agree. The campgrounds of Phoenix looked incredible. And I know you didn't roast Watkins Glen, but you said it, you know, 32,000 is not, it's an accomplishment because it's still the sellout for whatever stands they have. It's actually 39,000. But the campsites there are also tremendous. So, and they have camping downtown. So, you know, like you said, the NASCAR, I do believe, is on the uprise now after just 15 years of beating it down. And, you know, we have a lot of good talented drivers now as well. So, and one of those drivers, Neff, who I think is pretty talented and could do something, as we've seen in other series when he has the equipment, is Bubba Wallace. And, you know, we dug deep into the whole intentionally spinning last week at Texas on last week's podcast. You know, he finished 25th at Phoenix, which is about where they've ran all year. I mean, let's be honest. But he admitted to Dustin Long of NBC Sports on Friday, I believe it was Friday, that he intentionally spun. He's like, I learned it from Brad and Joey. You know, he's not going to change anything until NASCAR does something about it. And they did something about it. They penalized him $50,000 and 50 points, which dropped him from 27th to 28th in points. And there was a really good battle, still is, for 25th in points, and that's a big payout compared to 28th. Unfortunately, like 50 points for that team is roughly 3 or 4 races worth of points. So I want to get your take on this, because other drivers have definitely, we know this, since the beginning of time, since NASCAR came into play 70 years ago, drivers have spun out on purpose. They've done something that's helped them and, you know, kind of screw the rest of the people, as long as it helps them. And Bubba even admitted that. He's like, you know, I'm not in the moment. I'm not racing for Kyle Larson. I'm not racing for Chevrolet. I'm doing what's best for me. And that was to ultimately save, you know, spin out and save him a few laps.
Not go 2 laps down.
Exactly. Yeah. So what's your take on that?
Shut your mouth. I mean, it's that simple. If you don't admit to doing it on purpose, you're not going to get fined. And, I mean, Dale Jr. will tell you that. Dale Jr. at Bristol spun out on purpose to bring out a caution and then bragged about it on the radio. And what did it get him? It got him called to the hauler and fined. If you admit it, you're in trouble. If you don't admit it, it's really hard for them to prove it. Even though I know that people were trying to talk about the trace data from Bubba's car, that they could look at that and tell that he did it on purpose. But bottom line was, you couldn't tell it visually if it was on purpose or not. And if he had shut his mouth and just gone on about it, there would have been no problem. But the fact that he bragged about it, and again, part of why we love Bubba is he's braggadocious and he's confident and he's not afraid to speak his mind. And unfortunately for him, that was a really expensive mind speak. And I don't know if he has to pay this out of his own pocket, but I wouldn't be surprised if he would, because it's a deal where, you know, when a car fails inspection or whatever, teams will pay the fines because you're trying to go faster or whatever. You can't really point a finger at somebody trying to cheat. But when it's something where you blatantly admit that you did it, then the team is probably going to be like, yeah, we're going to let you pay this one. So I'll be curious to find out if he had to pay it on his own. I don't blame NASCAR for fining him. That's when so many people are spun out and calling his BS. He admitted it. It was that simple. If you admit that you did something on purpose, which ultimately impacted the outcome of the race, it like intentionally altered the race, you're going to get fined for it. And if he just kept his mouth closed, nothing would have happened. But because he talked, it happened. And I back NASCAR on it 100%. I know a lot of people are roasting them on this, and I will roast them over all sorts of things. But I think they're completely right on this because he admitted he did it, and you can't let that happen without some kind of repercussion.
Yeah, so I agree with you on most parts. The part that does kind of worry me is that Bubba is very outspoken, speaks his mind, very blunt, and that's the part we love. Now, should he have admitted it? Absolutely not. Because most people, I mean, we had this debate last week. You said you didn't think he spun on purpose. I'm like, I'm pretty sure he did. And a lot of people thought he did. Some people thought he didn't. And I saw Ryan Newman say over the weekend that it's nearly impossible to even, like you said, on the data to track that, you know, whether a person spun out on person or not, on purpose or not. So I don't know. It worries me that drivers are going to, and even crew members, you could, I guess, say, aren't going to be as blunt, aren't going to be as forthcoming with the media. Because had, for instance, say Dustin Long didn't go after this, this would have never have come out. So, yes, I do, you know, there's a lot of times where you should bite your tongue. I'm a victim of that. You are too. Where it would have been better to just say nothing. And in this case, that's what should have happened. He shouldn't have said anything. But, it is what it is. You live and you learn. He did say and joked around that Indy paid well, which he finished third at Indy, one of the biggest payouts of the year. So, I like I said, you live and you learn.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the book of experience has got another page for one Bubba Wallace.
Of course. Now, Neff, I do want to move into the Xfinity Series. Kind of break down the race weekends from Phoenix from that series and also the Truck Series. Allgaier finally got his first win of the year. It only took 9 months, but he's in victory lane, also in the championship race at Homestead. He's got a ton of momentum. Phoenix has kind of been his personal playground the past few years in the Xfinity Series. Now, I don't know if he could have beat Christopher Bell straight up because that 20 was in another zip code all weekend long. But he did have a speeding penalty on pit road at the end of stage two after leading all but one lap up till the end of stage two. And that was under pit stops. And then also, he spun out on lap 117 and went a lap down. So he only rebounded to 16th while Allgaier pulled away at the end and got his first win of the year.
It's one of those things to finish first, you must first finish. And unfortunately for Bell, they had that mistake on pit lane, which put him back in traffic, and then he's probably pushing it too hard, trying to make it up through traffic, and it ends up biting him. And we hear about it all the time, and we'll hear about it ad nauseum next weekend in all three races, that you can't shoot yourself in the foot on pit lane. And it happens all the time. Ironically, with two of the guys that are running in the Cup Series for the championship, Harvick and Hamlin are two of the most penalized guys on pit lane.
Especially Hamlin.
Yeah. I mean, it happens all the time. And when it's championship weekend, you cannot afford even one slip up like that because it puts you in just a bad spot. And that, unfortunately, is what happened with Bell. I'm with you. I think if Bell doesn't have that penalty, I don't think anybody sniffs him. But once he got back there, Allgaier took advantage of it, and we knew Allgaier's good at Phoenix. In honesty, I was a little bit sad because I was really hoping he would go and win the championship without winning a race, and I'm still hoping that our boy Matt Crafton can do that in the trucks. But it would it would just be fun to have somebody in the modern winning is everything world not win and get the championship. but yeah, I mean, I give credit to Allgaier. He has handled this difficulty this year with the class that he always does. And, you know, I've always felt, and I always will feel, that he did not get a fair shake on the Cup side.
Not at all.
And at 32 years old now, he's probably never going to, unfortunately. But I feel like what he did in H-Scott equipment versus what anybody else did in it was so much better that he really deserves to have some Cup starts. And I wish before his racing career comes to an end, and really before it gets to the latter years where he's not competitive, that they could figure out a way to give him a year in some Hendrick stuff and really see what he's capable of doing. Because I think if you gave him a year in Hendrick equipment, I think he would win 3 or 4 races.
Yeah, I can agree with you on most of that. I think he's definitely sick of hearing about the young guys, and the big three this year: Cole Custer, Tyler Reddick, Christopher Bell. So he kind of shut him up this week by winning. And I do think he has a realistic shot of winning at Homestead. I know we'll break that down here in a little bit, Neff. But, this was his worst. I wouldn't say his worst, because he's had 16 straight top 10s. Although he does say that top 10s don't mean a lot to him, because he's in winning equipment, wants to win. And it's coming off a year where he won 5 races last year. So, I mean, that's got to also be a tough pill to swallow, because he knows the equipment that he's in, like I said, but also what he just did a year prior, and to not see that success and to struggle for a lot of this year. I remember talking to him at the Philly Takeover, the Xfinity Takeover in Philadelphia in May, 6 months ago now. And he's like, you know, our start to the year has been terrible. It's been a disaster. All this negative, mindset that he had, which isn't Justin Allgaier. That's not the Justin Allgaier I know. So to see him rebound and, you know, like you said, handle this with class and ultimately go to the championship four, which is better than last year. He's going to finish better in points this year than he did last year when he won all those races. So in theory, I'd say that's a win in itself. And I truly think he has a good shot at winning at Homestead because of all of his experience, whether at Cup, Xfinity. He's made this race 2 times in the past, which is more than the other guys. You know, Custer, this will be his 2nd time in the championship four. Reddick also his 2nd, and Bell as well. So I think, we'll break it down, but I think this is going to be, you're going to have to win the Xfinity race in order to win the championship.
We will see. I hope not. I still would like to see a year where I feel like these races are straight up. And so far in the years of the playoffs, I have felt like the playoff four have had an advantage. And I don't know, you know, I don't have anything to base that on. I don't have anything to use as substance other than looking at the scoreboard and the fact that routinely, and I know they're the best guys in the sport, so there's a reason they're their final four, but routinely they are like at the top of the practice charts and they're at the front leading the most laps every year in these races. And I'm like, It's just too much of a coincidence, you know? And I would love to see it to where some also ran, won the race, and the championship isn't handed to the guy that wins the race. But if it is, it is, and it's a great story when it is, but sometimes I would like to see a different byline on the story.
For sure. Now, jump into the Truck Series, Neff. Stuart Friesen, you know, this race, the other two were dominated by playoff drivers this weekend. Truck race was not. The whole round of 6 in the truck race was not dominated by playoff drivers.
It was going to be.
Yes, it was going to be. But Stuart Friesen, he started from the front row alongside Austin Hill. He got shoved, I thought, by Ben Rhodes, but he beat the 16 to the finish line, and that's illegal in NASCAR terms on an initial start. It can happen on restarts, just the pole sitter has to be the first one across the line. Whether you get jacked up from behind or whatnot, also Austin Hill looked like spun his tires. And I mean, it is what it is. Friesen, he got lucky that there was a early caution. And, you know, he came back, got up to the lead, won the race. And he's been quiet all year. I mean, he obviously went outdoor. This is his first pavement win in NASCAR. So props to him. I also called it last week on the podcast, if you recall. But, Neff, what's your take on Friesen? And hey, he's going to Homestead. He can win this championship.
Absolutely. First of all, and I know people were flipping out about it before when the penalty was called on Friday. It's been that rule since God invented NASCAR. You cannot beat the pole sitter to the line at the start of the race, period. And there have been a handful of times that I can remember where I've seen that penalty called, but it's one of the most black and white rules we have in the sport. And I hated it for him, but that was the way it was. Had that not happened, I think Friesen would have led every lap. I think he was going to dominate that race because his truck was on rails. But with that said, he came back up through and was able to pass people and got back to the lead and got it done. And it was fun to watch. Now we head off to Homestead. And I mean, Friesen's got as good a chance as anybody. He has been, and I don't have it in front of me right now, but average finish for the year has got to be, if not the top, it's got to be pretty close. Because he's running at the front all the time. And it's just a matter of being able to finish. And their problem has been they haven't been able to finish. So we will we'll find out. But I mean, of the four guys left, I would say Friesen is probably co-favorite, if not favorite. He and Chastain, I think, are your two guys that you got to look at as the favorites of this one, just from their performances this year.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm looking at the average finish. I'm pulling them up from all the, you know, the playoff drivers, and he does have the best. He has an 8.4, Chastain 8.8, Crafton 9.1, Enfinger was 8.6. Looking at Moffitt is still looking it up. Racing Reference is loading 9.0. So. Yeah, they're all pretty similar. So, yeah, he does have the best average finish. Like I said, the two wins, Eldora, and then this past weekend at Phoenix. And let's get right into it now. So, like you said, you think he's a co-favorite along with Ross. Moffitt has the experience by winning the championship last year.
And Crafton, and the most wins.
And the most wins. Crafton's been here before a couple times, vying for a third title. I mean, you playoff drivers didn't win. They didn't win at Talladega. They didn't win at Martinsville. Friesen won it at Phoenix, but I don't think you have to win the race in order to win the championship this year, at least in the truck series. But I don't know. You're going to have the likes of Ross Chastain, who's going to be good. I would expect Moffitt to be pretty good. See, you think the co-favorites are Ross and Friesen. I think it's almost a three-way battle. And then with that, Matt Craven will probably win the championship, since I said it's a three-way battle.
Without winning a race.
But I think it's going to be a pretty good battle between Friesen, Chastain, and also Moffitt. I've said Chastain from the get-go. Ever since he declared for Trek Points in May, I think he's been probably the favorite or co-favorite with Moffitt, because they've been so... I mean, Moffitt started the playoffs, let's flashback 4 months or 3 months ago, whenever it was.
Yeah, whenever that started.
And he won the first two races of the playoffs at Bristol and in the road course in Canada. So I'm going to go Ross Chastain to win the championship, Neff. I feel like you're going to go elsewhere.
I am. I mean, we can't both pick the same one.
We could.
I think Ross is probably the he's obviously the sentimental favorite. I think it's the best story. I feel like Friesen, again, you got to lose them before you can win them. And I don't feel like they've been there yet. And something's going to happen to them during the race, pit stop wise or speeding on a pit lane or uncontrolled tire or something goofy like that. And that's why I'm going with my man Crafton. And I'm praying that somebody like Tyler Ankrum actually wins the race. He's my shout for it, because that'd be a great story. But I want to see Crafton win the title without winning a race, just so that the hand-wringing can begin of how he managed to do that in an era when winning is everything.
That would be absolutely wild.
Well, plus, and he's had just, I mean, we all know his feelings on this spec engine program that they've got, and he's been bit by it multiple times, and it would just be, it would be a kind of a just reward for him to end up winning the championship after, you know, especially if it's like, and we don't want to wish bad on anybody, but let's say Friesen and Chastain are battling for the win and both of them blow engines, and then Crafton cruises through and ends up winning and finishing second or third or something.
Yeah.
That would be an amazing development.
Instead of Thorsborg getting the bad batch of engines, it's actually GMS this week.
Right.
Because let's face it, Friesen and Chastain are GMS affiliates. The 52 with Helmar and then 45 with Nice. They get their chassis and engines through GMS. So, you know, I will say this, sticking with the truck series quickly, Friesen, that's big for the dirt racing community, because I don't know if y'all have ever watched Friesen on a dirt track, but he's a badass.
He is.
Absolutely. Else. Yeah, he raced around tracks in Central New York growing up, while I was growing up, and so I saw him win plenty of dirt races, you know, over the years. So that's big for the dirt community for sure. And then also Chastain, he was just on our podcast last week. It has been a dream season for him. Like I said, declared for truck points really late in the year after his Kansas win, really. So it was 3 months into the year and he still hadn't declared. Goes out, wins his first race since declaring at Iowa. So it was June. And then got that, failed inspection, went out, won the next one at Gateway. And then since then, it's just been an uphill, you know, climb to get in the top 20. Did that fairly easily. And now he's battling for a championship. And I think Ross is going to get it. I really do. He's got so much experience over all three series. And I know you could say that about Crafton, you know, specifically with the truck series, being a truck lifer for the most part. But I think Chastain's going to get it done. Neff, want to talk some Xfinity? Want to preview that race?
Sure.
All right. So I don't think there's any doubt. The big three made it. They've been the best three teams, drivers, cars. They've been the best three all year long. Cole Custer, Tyler Reddick, and Christopher Bell, of course, is who I'm talking about. And as I mentioned, Justin Allgaier won the race over the weekend at Phoenix to get in to join them. This is the championship four I predicted prior to the playoffs beginning, prior to the season beginning. I think... out of the three races, you're going to have to win this race. Because if you look at Custer, Reddick, and Bell specifically, they've won a lot of races this year. Combined, they've won 20. 20 of the 32. You add Allgaier in there, he's won 21. They've won 21 of the 32. So I think you're absolutely going to have to win. And I have, you know, we've went back and forth on this a few times this year, Neff. I got Cole Custer win the championship. We've seen what he can do at Homestead. Flashback 2 years ago when he led 182 of 200 laps. Last year, he dominated the first two stages, and then Jeff Meandering, who was then his crew chief, now has moved over to Joe Gibbs Racing, made a, you know, questionable pit call, I guess we could call it, that arguably cost him the race. I think Reddick would have probably beat him anyway, because Reddick found the wall midway through that final stage, but, you know, he finished second to Reddick. So I think Custer's going to rebound from last year. Maybe Reddick finishes second. But I do. I would not be surprised if these guys finish 1 through 4, just like last year at the Cup Series.
I agree. So I'm curious, and I'm sure you don't know the answer, but I'm looking at the points report, and they listed, you know, obviously the top four guys are technically tied, but they list Allgaier 1, Bell 2, Reddick 3, and Custer 4. And I'm like, what order is that in?
Yeah.
It's not car number. It's not wins. It's not playoff points. It's not stage wins. I'm like, I don't understand what order they put those guys in. I guess it doesn't really matter. I'm just off the top of my head. I'm with you. I mean, these guys are the four best in Xfinity this year. From looking at it from playoff points, Cindric has a few more playoff points than Allgaier, just from his dominance on road courses, I think helped him out there. And he got Briscoe, who's right in that mix. But basically, those are the top six guys. And they've whittled it down to these four. And any one of these four guys deserves it. And I don't think any of them would come across as like an undeserving champion or, oh, they lucked into it or something. I think all these guys have had seasons that deserve to be crowned with a championship. That said, I think Christopher Bell is going to win it. He should have won it last year. He has had a beyond dominating season this year. He's won 22 stages. 22. Cole Custer is second with 8. I mean, it's just, it's stupid. Bell's got 8 race wins. Custer's got 7. I mean, this is one of these things that just, he's dominant. And he was dominant last year. And you look at these results and you're like, this guy's, he deserves a championship. So I'm betting he gets it again. I know you, like you said, you think these guys will finish top 4. I'm crossing the fingers that we can get Chase Briscoe to win the race and then have Bell and Custer come across 3 wide with Allgaier and Tyler Reddick trying to swing to the high side as they come to the line and somebody ends up upside down and on fire. That would be phenomenal.
Quite the graphic.
I'm going Christopher Bell with my Victor pick, and I think Chase Briscoe wins a race.
So neither of that would be surprising. Briscoe, I mean, he proved in the truck series 2 years ago. That's where he got his first truck win. Also not in the playoffs at the time. Had already been eliminated. For Bell, I mean, yeah, we've talked about it. It's Kyle Busch numbers with the numbers he's put up. 16 wins and 73 starts. That's roughly 22%. That's not too shabby for, that extended amount of time. Tyler Reddick, as we mentioned last week on the podcast, looking to become the first driver to win Xfinity titles, consecutive Xfinity titles, with 2 different teams. Last year, obviously winning the title with Junior Motorsports before going over to RCR this year. Allgaier, he's been at this point, an Xfinity lifer. I know he had that, sprinkle 2 years into the Cup Series, but he's done his best work in Xfinity, and it would be cool to see him finally get a championship and kind of put not the big 3 to rest, but the young generation to rest to a degree, because there has been so much talking and touting of the future of NASCAR, and I'm all for that too, but I'm sure Allgaier wants to shut him up, as he said. Absolutely. He said that post-race yesterday. He said, I don't really care about the big 3. And for Custer, like I said, I mean, he's at least led 69% of the laps over the past 2 races at Homestead. That's not too shabby either. So I think this will be a good race, and I think they're finishing 1 through 4. But Neff, on Sunday, the main event, the Cup Series, we got Denny Hamlin, virtue of his win at Phoenix, like we talked about, Kevin Harvick by winning Texas, Martin Truex Jr. winning Martinsville, and Kyle Busch pointed his way in to the Final 4. I could argue that any of these drivers could win for sure. We got 3 Gibbs cars, 1 Ford and Stuart Haas Racing. It's the first time in the Cup level that there's been three teams from 3 different drivers from the same team. That happened once in the Xfinity Series in 2017 with Junior Motorsports. I've been riding the Hamlin bandwagon since really, I'd say, the middle of the season. I think the 11 team gets it done. I think they have a ton of momentum coming from Phoenix, where they led pretty much half the race. And I think he's going to win his first championship.
It feels like the cards are kind of lining up that way. But Truex is kind of an enigma. You know, he really didn't have the season that makes you feel like he's going to get it done.
He's been inconsistent,
but over the playoffs, they've been pretty strong.
Yeah.
And that's where I feel like they are in the spot and the position to be comfortable. And they've been massaging on this Homestead car for 2 weeks, knowing they were in the mix. And that's why, I'm leading to Harvick because of the fact that Harvick, after winning last week, just listening to him, and how he was talking about how they've already picked their car and made their decisions about drag versus speed and been to the wind tunnel. And they just sound so prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as you like to say that you assume the Joe Gibbs teams will all be prepared, you're splitting resources. Everybody that has the blue SHR logo on their jackets or on their shirts is working on the four car and is focused on the four car when it goes to Homestead. If you're on the 11, the 19, the 18, everybody with a JGR logo has got to split time on all three of those cars. And I realize that they've been preparing them for a while, and they prepare them as they always prepare them. But it's just, it's a different thing. And I feel like Harvick's team is just so prepared and ready for this. But at the same time, it would almost be poetic justice to see Kyle Busch win it.
Mm-hmm.
Because this has been a very un-Kyle Busch year. And it has just seemed like they've been off and they've been out to lunch and they have been kind of an also-ran. Even though, again, today I felt like they could have easily won this race and they were really close to it. So we shall see when it all pans out. But if I'm making a call, I think Kevin Harvick's going to win the championship. But I think Kyle Larson's going to win the race.
Yeah, I mean, he's been faster since he's really came into Cup.
And that's my hope, is if we go to Homestead and all three races are won by non-playoff guys. That's what I'm hoping.
As you just predicted. That would be wild. It'd be the first time we've seen that. Because every year that the Cup title has been decided at Homestead, the winner of the race is also in the championship for the past 5 years. I think that's going to be the same this year. I think Hamlin's got great numbers at Homestead. Truex is solid. Kyle Busch has made 5 straight championship fours. Harvick's made 5 out of the last 5 out of the 6. So these guys are, you know, this is only Hamlin's second. His first was being, you know, in the first year of it in 2014. So these guys are accustomed to greatness and to success and not letting the moment get the best of them, as we've seen with Truex. He's made 4 of the 6. Logano's made 3 of 6. So it's the same guys pretty much every year. But I think we're going to get a champion. I do think Hamlin will get the win and the championship. So, Neff, I'm excited for this week. I think we're going to have a great weekend of racing. I can't believe the season's all, you know, coming to an end. But any final thoughts about this weekend at Phoenix or previewing Homestead?
Previewing Homestead, I'm looking forward to it. I hope they go out in a blaze of glory as their last year settling the championship. I'm excited about the three races. I feel like we're going to have some intense racing and hopefully some Game 7 type moments. I mean, that's what this whole playoff thing is built for, and I feel like at least one of the races will give us a finish that we don't expect, and that's one thing I hope for. As for Phoenix, I'm hoping and praying that somewhere, somehow, between now and the end of next season, common sense is able to win, and we get some tires that fall off, and we get a spoiler that's less than 2 feet tall. Because that's our problem right now. We got tires we can race on forever. They don't fall off enough. And we got a spoiler that's making such a wake behind the car that getting by somebody is really, really, really hard. And it just, it shouldn't be like that. And to think that our championship's going to be decided in that fashion is really disconcerting. So I'm keeping the fingers crossed that between now and the end of next season, we find some soft tires laying around somewhere. And, the spoilers all fall off the cars in tech.
Yeah, I saw a post race today. They had Kyle Busch, Martin Truex, and Kevin Harvick all in the media center at the same time. And they were asked about, you know, the championship race being held at Phoenix next year. And all three of them, specifically Truex and Kyle, who was waving bye-bye in terms of, if you get out front and clean air next year, you're going to be probably crowned champion. Yeah. So, something needs to be done about that, because this wasn't the best. I hope this isn't the best product we can put on. And I know it's not, because we've had good Phoenix races recently. Not this year. Both races were very hard to pass. Had a little bit of lack of action, but who's to say, hey, maybe it'll be different next year. We'll never know. But with the next gen car coming in 2021, It's probably going to be the same. So I'm not
probably going to be the same.
Not going to get my hopes up. No interview this week. Decided not to get one this week because it's Homestead. However, we will have one next week with the Xfinity Series champion, whoever that is, whether it's Cole Custer, Tyler Reddick, Christopher Bell, or Justin Allgaier, as I'll be with them at Universal Studios next Wednesday, the day before the podcast comes out. So until then, we out.
Deuces.